Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Don't worry, just like Blair, he fights with Mike Wilner, too. Ben Ennis guest hosts The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This speech is my recital. I think it's very vital to rock
around.
That's right.
On top.
It's tricky. It's tight. Here we go. It's tricky to rock around. To rock around.
That's 10:02, right. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Anderson for Jeff Blair. It's the Jeff Blair Show. Blue Jays lose 2 out of 3 to the surging White Sox. White Sox with a series win over the Red Sox in Fenway Park. Took 3 out of 4. Had a real good chance to take 4 of those 4 games. Then they go back home and take 2 out of 3 against another tough team in the American League East. The Blue Jays with 3 more games on this roadie in Denver starting tonight, 8:30, 8 o'clock pregame show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet. Ben Nicholson-Smith joins me in studio, baseball editor, Sportsnet.ca. Hey, Ben.
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing. I promise I will not talk about the Rays that much and how right I was about them. I swear we're not going to talk about that for a half an hour, maybe 25 minutes.
11-game losing streak. It's pretty bad.
They're very bad.
Yeah, I don't think even you, as someone who was the low man on the Rays, would have predicted anything this bad.
No, I wouldn't have. And Drew Smiley's been bad. He's striking people out, but he's been bad.
Yeah. Moore has had his ups and downs.
Archer's been a train wreck still. Like, you're talking about an ERA in the mid-4s.
So when you look at a team that's built around pitching and they don't have their pitching going, and their best position player, Kevin Kiermaier's been hurt.
Yeah.
They've had Forsyth hurt. Their best reliever, Boxberger's hurt. I mean, there are a lot of things that have conspired to make them a very disappointing team.
Stop making excuses. They stink.
They do stink. I'm just explaining why. They definitely stink.
Yeah, they stink. I saw it coming. There's a lot of things that I thought I saw coming that didn't. Hey, if I get 1 out of my 10 predictions right, I'm going to talk about that one. So let's not talk about the other 9. Let's talk about the Blue Jays, though, after that series loss in Chicago yesterday. And you knew it was going to be tough to beat Chris Sale. Knew that going in. He's one of the best. And he showed you why. Looked like he was going to have a shutout, complete game shutout, with 50 pitches through a couple innings. Blue Jays did tag him for a couple of home runs later in that game. But, of course, the focus is back onto Marcus Stroman. And as much as 11 base runners in 5 innings is bad, and as much as 4 earned runs over 5 isn't good, it almost feels like we're viewing that start as a progression, Ben.
Yeah, I guess after the game he was saying that he felt better. So that's somewhat of a positive if you're a Blue Jays fan. But I think it's a question of where you set the boundaries for Stroman. If you look at that one start, okay, it's not the end of the world. If you look at the last 8-9 starts, it has been really, really ugly for Marcus Stroman. And then even if you look at his entire season, his entire body of work, he ranks in the bottom 10 in ERA in Major League Baseball. He's having a bad season at this point. And I still think he's a good pitcher. I think good pitchers can have bad seasons, can have bad stretches, but it's been a really rough season. Now, if you look at the entire body of work, if your ERA is over 5, you're not doing what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. And he has struggled inside the American League East. The ERA outside of it, I mean, it went up yesterday, but outside of the AL East, it's obviously much better than, you know, the times he's faced the Red Sox and the Orioles, which...
But that's his job, too.
Right. It is his job. But yeah, there's a lot of pitchers in Major League Baseball that have struggled against those two teams. And you're not asking... And you know what? A lot of pitchers have struggled against the Blue Jays. A lot of good ones. Like, is Chris Tillman good? That's a different question, but he struggled against the Blue Jays, and he's had some pretty good success against other teams. Like, how dire is it? Because you now... Like the clamoring for, hey, Drew Hutchison. People forget that Drew Hutchison was horrible last year. Had an ERA over 5 despite the whatever, 12 wins or whatever. Like, how is it to the point, and where does it get to the point where it's not tenable in the major leagues for Marcus Stroman?
I don't think it's at that point. I think that he's still one of their 5 best starters. And as long as you expect him to be one of your 5 best starters, I don't think there's a lot of reason to shuffle things up. As much as there might be clamoring for change in some pockets of the fan base, maybe in some pockets of the organization. But I think that when you look at Stroman's track record, last year, coming back, pitching well late in the season, pitching well in the playoffs, in 2014 he impressed, and early this season he looked pretty good. So you've got a lot to work with there. You look at the stuff, the ground balls. You look at the curveball that has a lot of bite to it. There are a lot of reasons to think that Marcus Stroman can be good again. And as long as those reasons exist, I think he's in that rotation. He's one of your top five. He's definitely not a top of the rotation starter right now. He's pitching more like a number five. But at the same time, I think you're going to need Hutchison later. I think replacing Hutchison or replacing Stroman with Hutchison now would create even more problems later on.
Right, and especially if somebody gets hurt, and then you're going right back to Marcus Stroman here. It's interesting because I think Blue Jays fans to this point in the season are kind of spoiled with the starting rotation because it was supposed to be the weak link, and there were supposed to be, or I expected there to be a lot of conversations about, boy, Jay Happ's, you know, got an ERA in the upper fours, and we're really, you know, like it's difficult to watch and putting a big strain on the bullpen. He's been outstanding.
Yep.
Marco Estrada has not only not regressed, he's been unfreaking believable. And R.A. Dickey's R.A. Dickey. So I understand that an ERA over 5 and a 5.3 is bad, and he's ranked near the bottom among qualified starters, especially over the last month or so. But honestly, like a start like yesterday, I know it's bad, and I know the White Sox are not the 27 Yankees offensively, but that's like someone in the rotation, generally you don't have five aces. Like someone in the rotation is not keeping up the pace at the front end of the rotation. Like that's not the worst start in the world. Like it's not James Shields giving up 10 over 2 innings or anything.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's not as though the Blue Jays can control anything that's happened in the past at this point. You know, they can't just pluck Drew Hutchison's AAA numbers and copy and paste and apply them to the future, and that's what's going to happen now. They have to determine who's going to be better from here on.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think there are a lot of reasons to believe that Stroman still can be a useful major league pitcher. He certainly hasn't been this year. This isn't to sugarcoat what he has done. He has struggled. He is disappointed. He has let the team down. But I still think if you're looking ahead, there are a lot of reasons to think he can be a good pitcher.
Well, and also, is there some maybe intrinsic value in having him struggle or go through things? Like he's already made a mechanical adjustment. We saw on the broadcast yesterday where his hands at the starting position are just a little lower, a little different. He's getting the ball out. Like is there maybe, and there's some that would argue that, hey, he could do for a little bit of humbling. I wonder if there's something to that as well, that maybe it's better he goes through these struggles at the major league level, as long as it's not totally killing you. And a couple of times over the stretch, it has totally killed the Blue Jays' chances at winning ball games. But as long as you're hanging in games like they were yesterday against Chris Sale, despite the fact they were down 4-0 in that game, is there maybe some actual value in him, if he's going through these struggles, to have it happen at the major league level?
I think that there's something to that. If you're looking at Marcus Stroman's development as a pitcher and looking at it long term, I can see the argument that you would want him to struggle at times and recover from those struggles, and then you've got a pitcher who knows how to do that. But I think in the short term, you want him to struggle not at all. You want him to go out there, dominate every time out, and if he lacks humility as a result, or if he lacks perspective as a result, so be it. You've got a pitcher who's dominating every night.
What's going on? There's like some real good pitchers struggling right now in this year in Major Leagues of Baseball. Like we mentioned, Chris Archer struggling. David Price, despite, you know, bouncing back after his horrible start, still has an ERA at 4.68. Like he's not the only guy with high expectations going into this year that struggled out of the gate.
Yeah, Dallas Keuchel's on that list as well. Cy Young winner. I mean, I think that even if you look at the guys,
it's because the balls are juiced, admit it.
Offense is up a little bit this year. That's for sure. But these guys are struggling relative to number three starters. They should be a lot better than this. I don't have an explanation. I mean, I think that with guys like Stroman and Keuchel, the ground ball pitchers, I mean, you're going to be susceptible to swings in what happens with your defense. You know, if you have a great defense behind you, maybe you're really good for a few starts. If that starts to disappear and you're pitching to contact a lot, then you're going to get a lot of doubles down the line and singles up the middle, and that could lead to trouble.
Talking to Ben Nicholson-Smith, I'm Ben Ennis, in for Jeff Blair, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So what do you take out of that start yesterday and the radar readings? Because I mean, we were just discussing this before we came on here, that it was, I mean, people were tweeting out, the StatCast guys that I follow on Twitter that work for Major League Baseball were tweeting, hey, Marcus Stroman hasn't hit 95 at all this season. He just threw like 8 pitches at 95 miles an hour in this game. And I saw Chris Sale throwing upper 90s, which is not generally the case with him. And Bo Schultz comes in and like hits triple digits. It's not supposed to happen that you have a hot gun, but something weird seemed to be happening yesterday.
Yeah, I don't quite buy those readings, to be honest. And maybe I should. Maybe I should just completely agree that everything that StatCast puts out is accurate. But I don't know. Sale all season long has been pitching, you know, 92, 93. He pushes it up to 95 if he needs a big pitch. And Stroman, too. I mean, you look at, we have seen enough Marcus Stroman starts to know that he's usually going to be around, let's say it's 92 miles an hour. And so 95 isn't his wheel. Honestly, I think something's off. I don't think it's a stretch. I don't think it's a conspiracy theory to say that.
So the Blue Jays offense, of course, struggles against Chris Sale. Who doesn't? But yeah, and without Jose Bautista, it's a different look. And against the lefty, it seems like Junior Lake is going to get the occasional start in right field. And he finally had his first hit as a Blue Jay yesterday. It was a long ball off Sale. And Ezekiel Carrera, I guess, goes back into the leadoff spot. And Donaldson gets pushed back down to three. Like, how do you like the look of the lineup where Donaldson, I guess, we'll see against the next lefty. Donaldson hits two against lefties, but three against righties because you go Carrera and Travis too.
Yeah, I think that, you know, generally you just want your best hitters getting a ton of at-bats. And so if Carrera's taking at-bats away from Donaldson, I don't know if that's plan A. I get that the Blue Jays are tinkering, and really all season long, they have had so many different lineups that I'm not going to read too much into, you know, the latest trend, if you want to call it that, with lineups, because I think that John Gibbons is probably going to adjust. And a week from now, we might be having an entirely different conversation. But, you know, I think in general, you want Donaldson up, let's say, as the number two hitter, the number three at worst, because he's such a good hitter. Encarnacion, too, hitting right behind him. You want those guys stacked early so that they can do as much damage as possible.
So the Blue Jays, of course, lose the DH for these three games in Denver against the Rockies. I kind of like the look. I know, hey, Justin Smoke has done a fine job this year, but I'm not exactly the biggest Justin Smoke guy, as people who listen to me on this radio station I'm sure know. I kind of like the idea of having that rotating DH spot for some of these infielders. Josh Donaldson, Troy Tulowitzki was the DH yesterday, and of course, Edwin Encarnacion, you get him filtered through there. I kind of like the idea of, and I know, sure, Justin Smoke, if he's going well, the bat is more valuable than, say, a Barney who was playing shortstop yesterday. But you look at the career numbers, like, frankly, there's not a massive difference. Like, he's got an OPS around 700 against righties. Hey, Darwin Barney, I guess, has an OPS around 600 against righties, which is not great. But it's livable, I suppose, and if you talk about the defense he plays at shortstop. I kind of like the idea, and I guess once Smoke is healthy again, he's going back to first base, but I kind of like the idea of rotating some of the guys that have been injury-prone, not Colin Donaldson injury-prone, but Tulowitzki definitely, through that DH spot.
Yeah, and once Batista's back, you could do the same thing with him in that role. I think the other advantage of having Smoke on the bench, say for these three games or however long it extends, is if you're late in game and you have a Darwin Barney in the starting lineup, you need a home run, you need a double or something like that, you can go to a Smoke, pinch hit with him, and you're carrying so many infielders right now that you can substitute easily on the way back. So I think that it creates a few more options. And, you know, I know a lot of people are critics of National League Baseball and having pitchers hit and all that kind of thing, but I always like watching those games, and it's going to be kind of fun this week to see the Blue Jays in an NL park where they have to be a little bit more crafty in terms of their bench management.
I just think it's unfair that you make teams do this in the middle of the season because the roster construction is not built for it. You see, I think it's, I don't know necessarily who has the bigger disadvantage. I would argue it's maybe the National League teams because they don't have that prototypical DH. Like, they can't afford to have a guy with like next to no defense. And we've seen some pretty like ugly looking numbers for DHs on some National League teams. I mean, generally some bad teams like the Phillies and like the Padres have run through some horrible DHs here in the last couple of weeks. But yeah, I will say generally there's not a lot of interesting decisions in the National League game because it's usually pretty straightforward. But it will be interesting, I guess, to see a different style from the Blue Jays next three games.
Yeah, it will for sure. And I think that Yes, I see what you're saying about it being unfair, but at the same time, they know the schedule. I mean, they know as far back as last fall that they're going to be playing interleague games at this time. They can make a roster move if they want to call someone up and send a reliever down. I mean, that's pretty easy to do, so I don't know if it's necessarily unfair.
So Bo Schultz got the call up with Gavin Floyd on the DL, and he like we said, was throwing pretty hard yesterday. Did strike out the side outside of that home run.
Yeah.
The ball was flying out of the ballpark, as it is generally at U.S. Cellular Field. And he was a guy that arrived on the scene last year, maybe a valuable guy. And the Blue Jays are trying to find some mix that works in that bullpen to get the ball to Roberto Osuna. I was kind of surprised that, because twice now we've seen the Blue Jays rush guys back from injury because of injuries that happened while they were on rehab assignments. It happened with Devin Travis. It happened with Troy Tulowitzki, which I'm not sure either guy's getting the call off if one, Tulo doesn't get hurt when Travis was called up, and then Bautista is not hurt when Tulo's called up. I was kind of surprised we didn't see the same thing with Brett Cecil yesterday, that we see, because I think he had pitched in a couple of rehab games, at least one. He pitched for Buffalo again yesterday. I was kind of surprised that we didn't. He's a reliever. Like, how much rehab does he need to return to the major leagues? Were you surprised to see Schultz called up?
You know, I wasn't surprised, but that's a good point. You know, it is different than what we'd seen with those position players, and they could use Cecil. I mean, it's so clear watching this team go through the late game stretches that they need lefty relief. And Brett Cecil, when he's on, can be so good in that role that, you know, the temptation is going to be there. It sounds like he'll be back with the team on Thursday at the latest. But, you know, Schultz is someone that at least can give them a little bit of a different look. And he also, by virtue of having options, can be shuffled back and forth a little bit. So he's a nice piece, you know, even if he's not necessarily going to overpower, he's not going to instantly step into that setup role and get you to Osuna every time out. But hey, as I said before, this team is willing to make adjustments on the fly. And really, they've had to make a lot of adjustments with both the bullpen and the lineup.
And now they head to Denver, to Coors Field, which is interesting. And we get to see a fly ball pitcher pitch there tonight. And Marco Estrada takes the ball in game one, J-Hap tomorrow, and then Aaron Sanchez to wrap up the series. So we'll see how Estrada's fly balls, whether they stay in the ballpark tonight at Coors Field. Apparently the second time the Jays have been to Coors. I don't remember the first time. But apparently, like, naturally, we're well into interleague play. They've obviously been to Denver. And Troy Tulowitzki returns to the place where he spent the majority of his career until he was, of course, shockingly traded to the Blue Jays before the non-waiver trade deadline a year ago. I expect it's going to be just a love fest for him. Like, it wasn't his decision to be traded. In fact, he was kind of heartbroken, seemingly, at the time last year.
Yeah, I would think that if you're a Rockies fan and you know that this is your chance to see Tulo, and maybe your last chance for a while too, because the Jays visit Denver so infrequently, I would think that those fans are going to take advantage of it, shower him with all kinds of affection, and really it's a chance to express their appreciation that they probably didn't get last year when he was traded. So I think it'll probably be an overwhelmingly positive response to Tulowitzki, even if he has mixed emotions about some elements of their organization. I mean, the GM, Jeff Brydeck, is clearly not on his, you know, most called list. But
and probably not getting a Christmas card.
No, probably not. But at the same time, I'm sure everyone from clubhouse attendants to coaches to former teammates, he would want to have those hellos.
How good is this Rockies team? Because they've been kind of like hanging around 500. And they've got some real performers offensively, of course. Trevor Story emerging on the scene this season out of absolutely nowhere. Carlos Gonzalez is good. Nolan Arenado, one of the best young third basemen. Hey, DJ LeMahieu was hanging around there for maybe a batting title. Hey, we haven't mentioned Charlie Blackmon, but I guess like the rotation is very much a work in progress. The relievers, it's tough to just be a pitcher in general playing half your games at Coors Field, but that's, it's kind of a scary lineup for the Blue Jays to face.
Very scary. Yeah, I think that they have a ton of power up and down the lineup, really. Even if you get down the list toward guys like Mark Reynolds, I mean,
yeah,
he can still hit it out of the park, even if he's going to strike out a lot. So,
how much does he love playing in that ballpark?
Perfect fit.
Yeah.
Perfect fit for him. So I think that really it's the perfect fit for a lot of hitters, and it's a great spot to hit, but it's just that same story with the Rockies. They're a great offensive team, especially at home, and then you have a rotation that just is so unimpressive, right? Like, there's not a lot there. They're constantly searching for answers in the rotation. The bullpen hasn't been very good either. And so you're looking at a team that's just overall kind of maybe 500 or I would say less.
Yeah, and Miguel Castro hasn't exactly been great shakes for them either. He's back demoted. I've seen him a couple of times get lit up. We've yet to see Jeff Hoffman, which I thought might have been cool if we'd seen him called up. You figure at some point he's going to get a call up to that team and enter the rotation. Yeah, it's so hard to evaluate those offensive players, though, right? It's always been the case, and that's maybe why Larry Walker is not in the Hall of Fame. You know, like there's just so and maybe the pushback is too much, and especially with the home runs, because it's not necessarily the home runs, is that balls just carry there, and there's a lot more base hits. It just, like, how good a player is Nolan Arenado? Do we know? We know he's a great defender. Do you think, does that skill set translate to another team?
I would think it would. I would think with guys like Arenado, it would. Of course, I thought that with Tulowitzki.
Right.
In the, most of a year since he's left Colorado, he has been a shell of his former self offensively. I think that's fair to say. Maybe he rebounds.
Although he's coming back around.
Hey, 3 homers in the last week since he came back from the DL. So you never know. But the fact is, he has not hit well since leaving Coors Field. So I think that you could look to other guys like Matt Holliday. And Matt Holliday in the, what is it now, 6-7 years since he's left Coors Field, been with the A's, been with the Cardinals, and he's been a tremendous offensive player.
Yeah.
Really, really unaffected by leaving Coors Field.
Talking to Ben Nicholson-Smith, I'm Ben Ennis in for Jeff Blair, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So things kind of opening up in the American League East, and that is due in large part to the Orioles getting to play the Rays, who are rancid right now, and it bears repeating. They've lost 11 in a row. They're 31-43, seemingly moving close to out of it, and maybe there's some pieces they can sell off before the July 31st non-waiver trade deadline. But the Orioles, like, that offense is prolific. It's really, really, really good. And they're 15 games over 500, and the Red Sox have really struggled recently. They're 4 games back. Blue Jays 5 games back. It's not like a massive. It's not like the Cubs earlier this season with like a 12-game lead on the Cardinals or whatever. Or the Rangers now pulling away. Yeah, 10-game lead, although the Astros have really pulled themselves out of a horrible hole to start the season. Is it time to start if, like, I will say I'm not entirely believing in the Orioles, but the knob is being turned a little bit for me. I still think there's holes there, especially with the starting staff, but are you starting to believe a little bit more in the Orioles that they're kind of what the Blue Jays maybe were expecting to be this year? They just beat the snot out of the baseball and just get by with their starting staff.
Yeah, and they haven't been doing much more than that on the starting pitching side. I mean, you've got Kevin Gausman and Chris Tillman. That's 2 pretty good starters. I think those guys are the kinds of starters you could want to build a rotation around. And after that, man, like it really falls off. I'm not a
Ubaldo's back in the rotation somehow.
And Gallardo, I'm not a believer in him. Then you have the Wrights and the Wilsons, and it just doesn't add up to being a very good rotation. But the offense has just been coming in waves. And, as much as we talk about the Red Sox as being this deep offensive group, and the Blue Jays too, to a lesser extent, I think the Orioles deserve to be in that mix when you talk about guys like Adam Jones now coming around. Wieters had 2 home runs on Saturday. So even as Mark Trumbo slows down a little bit, Chris Davis goes in and out of his hot streaks.
Yeah.
Just got so many offensive pieces to keep things going.
Yeah, and I wasn't know what to make of Hyun-Soo Kim before the season, because he was a guy that a lot of people talked about. That's not going to translate to the major league level. He was so bad in spring training, and the Orioles were trying to convince him to go down to AAA because he needed to figure things out. Apparently, he was right.
Yeah.
You don't see that often. And for a team that, yes, they are an incredible offensive team, they don't take a lot of walks, right? No. Like, that's not their deal. But that's the one guy that can, like, work a count, get on base. So they kind of have a good mix there offensively.
Yeah, it's a really good mix. And so if they are able to go out and add at the trade deadline, I mean, I think that even if you just get a decent starting pitcher to slot in as your number 4 or number 5, then that could be a pretty big upgrade for them. They don't need to get the best pitcher out there. They don't need to get a Julio Teheran to really upgrade. And I think the Red Sox are going to be even more aggressive. I'm still convinced that as much as, they haven't been playing their best baseball of late, I think they're going to go out there and add at least one starter and at least one reliever.
It is getting to that time where we start talking about additions and the non-waiver trade deadline. And Sonny Gray, you figured this is finally the year he's going to be moved. Although, you want to talk about aces that have struggled this year. He's on that list as well with David Price and Chris Archer. And then the conventional belief with the Blue Jays is that there's just nothing there to trade. There's no assets to give up to get a ready for the major leagues asset right now. Is that the way you see it? Is there anything the Blue Jays can do to add before the deadline?
I think if they wanted to, they could make a big trade, right?
Just totally make the cupboard totally bare.
Yeah, you could, if you, hypothetically, you could trade Connor Green and Sean Reid Foley and Dalton Pompey, and at that point, you're getting something really good back. But I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to be buyers. I'm pretty convinced of that. I don't think that they're going to trade any of their big-name pieces, although people continue to speculate about Bautista or Encarnacion. To me, that's just not happening.
Does that make any sense to you? Like, okay, so the only scenario it makes any sense is that when Aaron Sanchez goes the ball, and I'm not saying it makes sense, but this is the only scenario in which it makes a modicum of sense to me, is if when Aaron Sanchez goes to the bullpen, you add a starter by trading away Jose Bautista, like an elite level starter. Like, instead of Drew Hutchison in the back end of your rotation, you've got Steven Matz or something. But
you're not getting Matz for Bautista.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think.
You're not. You're not. Because even last year, okay, so last year, the Mets traded Cespedes.
Mm-hmm.
They got Cespedes and they gave up Michael Fulmer. That's
right.
A very comparable situation.
Yeah.
Cespedes was on the brink of free agency, right-handed power hitter, and he was traded for a controllable arm. But Michael Fulmer at the time, even though he's since emerged, at the time he was a minor leaguer. Whereas Matz at this point
has
established himself as a number two starter.
Although Fulmer, like seeing what we've seen out of him this year, probably could have stepped into the rotation immediately.
Right. But from what we knew about Fulmer at the time, he was not an ace, you know? So I don't think you're getting an ace for Bautista. You could probably get a controllable, interesting arm. You could probably get a back-end starter, but you're not going to get an ace. So to me, you're just not trading those guys. And it's almost like the Andrew McCutchen discussion in Pittsburgh where people speculate about that. But to me, even if it makes some sense on paper, when you're talking about guys like McCutchen and Bautista, who are such centerpieces of their respective franchises, I think it's so hard to pull off on so many different levels. You have no trade clauses involved.
Yeah.
You have a lot of history. And they need his production. So I just don't see that happening.
And I know it's no fault of his own that the injury has taken place to Jose Bautista. And certainly there'll be time once he returns to reemerge and salvage a good season. He was having a good season when he was hurt. I mean, the home runs were not off the charts. He was not on a 50-homer pace or anything, but was leading the American League in walks like he does, even though he was hitting .230, whatever. But has he lost some money here? Like, has his market changed? And could it change? Like, is there a good possibility here that $100 million, $150 million over 5 years is very much not in the cards for Jose Bautista?
Well, yeah, I'm taking the under on 150.
Yes.
I think that, yeah, it's changed for sure, but it has the potential to change again in the next few months. So I think that, you know, you can look at a player and say, okay, at this point, they've, you know, say Michael Saunders. He has boosted his free agency a lot. Could he see that free agent stock diminish in the next couple months? Of course, just as Bautista could raise it. So I think that with both of these guys, with Encarnacion, there's just so much time left in the season. Even Brett Cecil, right? Mm-hmm. If you were to say, well, okay, he was really bad to start the season, and then he was on the disabled list, his free agent stock has really been hurt. But if he goes out and has a dominant 3 months to end the season, he'll be just fine. He'll have suitors lining up to give him multi-year deals.
It's a good point, yeah. So what you're saying is it's early.
Well, you know what? It's not early for teams, but if you're a free agent, you've still got time.
Yeah, you do. And the Blue Jays still with plenty of time. Last road series, though, before the All-Star break starts tonight in Denver against the Rockies. Ben, thanks for this.
Thanks. Anytime.
There's Ben Nicholson-Smith. Coming up on the other side of the break, we will talk to John Molinaro, who's already sweating buckets, getting ready for Italy-Spain Euro 2016. That's coming up next. I'm Ben Ennis, in for Jeff Blair at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now, prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
.1038 Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis in for Jeff Blair. It's the Jeff Blair Show. We all have our own neuroses. We all have our own anxieties. I have plenty myself, right? I'm sure you do. Hey, if you're in your car right now, you're driving the city, I'm sure you don't have to look all that far to find your anxieties. Our next guest is just full of nerves and anxiety. He can relate to you right now. John Molinaro joins us in studio. Chief soccer reporter for Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. John, thanks for this. You are nervous, though. Italy, Spain. At noon this afternoon.
Yeah. Okay. I'm always nervous, though, whenever my team plays.
You're a big ball of nerves.
Yeah. regardless of how my team, how I think they'll do. I'm just always nervous.
But okay, so I think what in talking to and there's a lot of Italians around this building.
Yeah,
Dan Riccio is a big Azzurri guy, naturally. I think most Italians that I've talked to, they like to underplay everything that's happened with the Italians, even if they look real good in right. the first match against Belgium. It's, oh, well, whatever. Like, this is classic Italy. You know, they play this defensive style, just hope to get a break the other way and score, take advantage of their limited opportunities. This won't work. This is not how you win at a tournament. Is that how you view it? Or do you, like, undersell it to yourself? Or do you actually have optimism going into today against Spain?
I have a little optimism. I think they looked pretty solid in through the group stage, much better than I thought they would, just because I just thought the lack of attacking options and quality up front that they were going to struggle a bit. But, you know, defensively and from a defensive organization perspective, they were, I think, one of the best teams in the group stage. So I think that's sort of the key. If they can negate Spain and really keep them in check and kill off any chances that they have of just sort of, you know, going forward, then absolutely Italy has a chance. I'm not expecting it, but yeah, I think this is a winnable game.
So it's a weird jersey choice you came up with today.
Yes, Arsenal.
Like, yeah. Why? I imagine you have an Italian national team jersey. No,
I do. It's just honestly, Ben, it was just the only clean thing left.
All right. Okay. Yeah. You're just at dire straits these days. You're tweeting out pictures of you eating fried chicken.
I know.
Like, you're wearing Arsenal jerseys on the day in which it's the biggest game in the last few years for the Italian national team. Yeah. It's just very bizarre from you.
Well, my life kind of falls apart like during these big tournaments because Everything else gets pushed to the side. Yeah. So it's
Where do you plan on watching this thing? Over at your desk?
In the newsroom. Yeah.
Okay.
I got to write a column later on this.
All right. So is there going to be somebody sitting next to you? Because you're a flailer. I've seen you in these big matches, and there's, like, fist pumps, and there's, like, a lot of gesticulation. You need a radius, I think. Like, I think you need anybody that sits next to you maybe should move away for those 2 hours.
There's one guy sitting beside me, but I don't think Evan is in work today. So,
oh, there. You're set.
So I'm set. But, I flail about a bit, but, I mean, but when there's something to flail about, I'm not sort of... You know, every minute, I'm pretty much sort of calm and just, you know, intent on watching the game. If there's a goal, then that's when I'll flail about.
I can't wait to see you in that first half. I'll stick around, take some videos, maybe post them on Twitter at BenSSNet. So yesterday was much better at the Euros than Saturday. Saturday.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And we talked about it on the radio over the weekend, how just dreadful Saturday was as far as the quality of play. Hey, yesterday was fun.
It was. Yeah, it was a lot of good games. I know people will look at, you know, the 4-0 win by Belgium over Hungary and see that as a blowout, but it was a lot closer than it was. And, you know, Ireland gave France a bit of a scare, you know, getting that penalty goal in the second minute. That sort of livened things up. Germany, you know, after kind of quietly going about their business through the group stage, you know, really kind of put the hammer down and looked like the world champions and put on a quality display against Slovakia. So, yeah, I mean, compared to Saturday, which was, you know, absolutely dreadful from a quality and entertainment standpoint, Sunday was... more than made up for it, I felt.
Talking to John Molinaro, chief soccer reporter, sportsnet.ca. So France was one of the favorites.
Yeah.
And like you said, they were down 1-0 to Ireland yesterday, but came back to win 2-1. They were at home, naturally, for the remainder of the tournament. Germany through with a 3-0 victory over Slovakia, and Belgium with a 4-0 victory over Hungary. That side of the draw is stacked. It's a tough one. And I think those people that have made the case for all three of those teams as being a team that can win this thing, well, certainly now that we're into the quarterfinals, anybody can win it. But of those three, France, Germany, Belgium, who's looked the most impressive to you?
Overall, I still think the Germans. I still think, you know, despite – and, you know, the world champions are always held to a ridiculously high standard sometimes, and I think people expect them just to sweep all in front of them. And – they really didn't play. I think the criticism of them in the group stage was very harsh. They played well. I mean, they didn't lose a game. They didn't concede a goal. They still won a difficult group ahead of Poland. So, but I think there was still a sense from watching them through those first three games that there was more to come, that they, you know, hadn't hit top gear. And I think we saw it yesterday. I mean, they absolutely dominated Slovakia. It was a dominant and professional performance. They have quality and so much depth all over the pitch that I really think they have to be considered the favorites. France, if for no other reason that you know, they have the home field advantage, and I think that's going to carry them a long way. But if I could pick one team, it would be Germany.
I know we talked on Saturday, and you talked about being really excited for Croatia, Portugal, and it really underperformed or undersold, it oversold and underdelivered.
Yes.
In Portugal winning in extra time. But I think for neutrals today, like I know for you, Italy playing whoever, Micronesia would have been exciting. But I think for neutrals, this is the match of the round of 16, right? Italy, Spain?
I think so. I mean, I still think, you know, it certainly didn't play out that way, but Croatia, Portugal could have been the game of the round of 16. It just under delivered, as you said. But from going into it, it certainly had all the possibilities of being the best match, just when you look at the caliber of talent on display. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, Italy, Spain, I think it's right up there potentially as one of the best games of the round. You're talking about two of the best teams in the world. You're talking about a replay of the final from 4 years ago. And just look at the caliber of players on display, from Gianluigi Buffon, who I still think is one of the best goalkeepers in the world, to Andres Iniesta, to Leonardo Bonucci, to Alvaro Morata. This is a star-studded game between two very good teams.
So 2 years ago, Spain didn't get out of the group stage at the World Cup.
Right.
Are they back? Like, because I'm sure that was a moment of big-time discussion in that country that was for a long time. They won everything internationally there was to win, and to not even make it to the knockout round of the World Cup. And by the way, do you remember the winner of that group? Because I have it right here.
I want to say Chile.
No, Chile was second.
Was it Holland?
Yeah, the okay. Dutch won that group. They didn't even make Euro 2016. So it's weird how things can change in just a matter of 2 years, because the Dutch did not qualify in an expanded format for the 2016 Euros. And here are Spain. We're talking about them as being one of the favorites. Are they all the way back then?
I don't know that they're all the way back, but I certainly think that they're back, and they've certainly put, you know, the disappointment of Brazil behind them. Yeah, you're quite right. There was a lot of discussion and hand-wringing after they bowed out so meekly in Brazil 2 years ago. But I think when you look at it, especially how they've played now, I mean, it was really just an aberration. They've rebounded quite nicely. You know, through the first two games of this competition, they were outstanding. And up until, you know, they conceded that goal against Croatia, they were, you know, I think most people were ready to crown them champions of this team. I think that, or this tournament. I still think that's premature, and they have to get by Italy. But yeah, I think they're back to an extent.
So the round of 16 will wrap up this afternoon at 3 o'clock with England and perennial powerhouse Iceland with all their sons, S-O-N, all 11 starters with the last names that end in S-O-N.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You didn't know that? Oh, it's a great piece of trivia.
Okay.
Yeah. No, but they're like one of those fun teams in this tournament with the expanded format that we get to see. And that is, I don't know if you can call it overperforming, because they were pretty good in qualifying. And they're a legit team. And they've got some players that have played in some significant leagues in Europe. But this is, boy, if England loses this one, that's a tough one, right? Like, this is the pressure's all on the English.
Oh, absolutely it is. You know, the Iceland is playing in their first major international tournament, so I think, you know, not to say that they're glad just to be here, but yeah, absolutely the pressure is all in England, because if they fail against a team the caliber of Iceland with all the limited resources they have compared to, you know, the motherland, the great sort of creators of the game, I wouldn't even want to imagine.
Be a tough week for that part of the world.
It sure would. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't even want to imagine what the reaction in the English media would be. You know, the English media being so staid and, you know, reserved at times. Of course, I'm kidding. Yeah, I think it would just create like a major crap storm.
Yeah. And as much as I want to see you today during Italy, Spain, I want to see James Sharman as well this afternoon.
Yeah, he gets pretty nervous too.
Yeah, he gets intense. But he's very much like, as much as you want to underplay your expectations for Italy, he's like even more so. He's very down on
absolutely.
The English.
Like, absolutely. Yeah.
Which is a pretty smart way to go. Before we go, I do want to ask about Messi losing in another final, Copa America yesterday to Chile. And it's four major competition finals recently and losses in all four. Three Copas and one World Cup, in which they lose to Germany. And like in the heat of the moment, he says, I'm done.
Right.
Misses a penalty. says that's it for me at the international level. Like he's not Ibra, who's what, in his 30s already?
Yeah, Ibrahimovic is 34, 35, something
right.
like that.
Right, and he plays for Sweden, which is not Argentina.
Right.
Messi's what, 28, 29?
He's 29.
Is that legit? Is that just a heat of the moment thing, or is that it? Have we seen it from Messi at the international level?
I think it was just heat of the moment. I think the sort of frustration of, you know, losing, you know, a second consecutive Copa America final in as many years to Chile in the same way in the penalty shootout, him missing the penalty. I think the frustration and the heat of the moment just got the most of him. I don't think this will stick. I'm praying that it doesn't, because at 29, I think he has a lot more to give. He'll only be 31 in Russia. And I think he has a lot more football, plenty of more football left in him. If he does step away, I mean, that's a shame, but I don't think it changes his legacy at all.
That was my next question.
Yeah, I still think, I mean, people will say, well, he's quitting on his team and he didn't win the World Cup, so he can't be considered among the greatest. I think that's utter nonsense. I've never considered, you know, winning World Cups a prerequisite for being considered the greatest of all time.
It might be the end of the beard, though.
Probably, yeah. Didn't that look weird on him?
It was very weird. He always looks so fresh-faced and young, right?
Yeah, well, he just kind of looked like a hobo out there. It was just like, what are you doing?
It's amazing that you're casting stones about people's appearance.
Yes, I shouldn't be doing that, considering my facial hair situation.
Thanks, John.
No problem.
There's John Molinaro. Again, chief soccer reporter for Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, and the sweat, you should see, it's just beating down his face right now already. And we're still an hour plus away from kickoff between Italy and Spain in the round of 16 at Euro 2016. Hey, Kevin Barker's not nervous. He's just happy. Hey, he did well, apparently, his Euro picks over the weekend. Apparently, we have to make more Euro picks on Baseball Central, which is coming up. We will look back at the week that was for the Toronto Blue Jays weekend series, losing 2 out of 3 to the White Sox, and look ahead to Denver. It's always fun to see the Blue Jays go to places they don't go that often. They're in Colorado tonight to play the Rockies. First of 3 games. Kevin Barker next, Baseball Central. I'm Ben Ennis in for Jeff Blair. This is Sportsnet 590 The Fan.